This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, this is Ken Tangen. This is episode 59 of What's It Like. My guest is Peter Bayless. Somewhere in the Northeast. Where exactly are you, Peter?
I'm in North Andover, Mass. It's about 25 miles north of Boston.
Ah, and did you grow up in that area?
Yep, I grew up in Stoneham, Massachusetts. I spent my whole childhood there. And went to college out in Ohio, Kent State. Then I moved back to Massachusetts. My wife was from Ohio also. So I dragged her back to Massachusetts and got a house out here and ended up having a couple kids out here.
Did you come from a large family?
Yes, a family of five. My father would be a typical 50s working guy who'd go to work and come home and watch TV and have a scotch and go to bed. That type of a guy, but he was a great father. He'd go to the beach, he'd do activities. We had a summer place up in Maine, you know, nice guy. My mom was an art student and ended up being a fashion designer. So just, you know, pretty much a basic normal parents, and neither of them had gotten divorced. I had a very fortunate to have a good family life, good childhood.
Did you have a favorite possession growing up?
Childhood possession? Probably a camera. My father got me a camera when I was about 13. And I made my own dark room in the cellar. Of course, this was back in 1968 or so, when they didn't have digital cameras, of course. I had film developing and taking pictures. I shot photos for the local newspaper. And I decided then I wanted to be a photographer.
And did black and white development?
Yep, all black and white. I shot for the local papers. And then I learned to get my degree in photography at Kent State in Ohio.
Hmm. So did you do color, too?
I did color later on when I started working as a professional photographer. We did cut and color slides mostly. And I would give about 4 or 5 assignments a day, come back and work till about 2 in the morning and fill in all the spaces they needed in the newspapers for each event.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much my routine. That was my routine before I had kids.
And back in the 60s, the professional photographers were using slides as their primary media for doing product shots and all kinds of things.
Yeah. We did slides. We did, then we moved on to, we never did use the color negative. It was pretty much all slides. And then we would switch back and forth. We also shot in black and white, depending on the assignment. And then, of course, it switched over to digital. And about the time when that was happening, it's when I had my first child.
Who had the largest influence on you growing up?
Probably my family, although I didn't know it. And you know, as I realized later on, your family has a huge impact on you. And the way your parents behave and the way they talk to each other. They didn't argue. They hardly argued at all. Actually, I've never heard them have an argument now that I think about it. And my dad, he didn't swear, but my parents didn't. And they were, you know, pretty, you know, very understanding people. And for a family of five, you know, that's pretty good. Dad worked as a middleman. He sold Speedy Dry and oil and sandpaper, and he would take me along with him to different stores and, get to know his customers. And turned out, even though he would charge a higher price for what he was selling, and they did just like talking to him. He was a good conversationalist. So, and I said to my wife, I asked him, I said, why do they, you know, pay more for what you have? Oh, they just like to talk to me. You know, it's really more of a personal thing. And he's one of those small businesses that probably wouldn't exist now, you know, because of the mega stores that are out there.
A good sales tip, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know how your parents met?
They met in an orchestra. My mother played the flute, my father played the trombone, and they were in the Melrose, Massachusetts Symphony Orchestra, and the conductor at the time was Arthur Fiedler, as a young man, and they saw each other, and they played every week, and they got to know each other, and eventually they ended up getting married. Kind of neat.
What was your major challenge as a child?
Probably as a kid, I had a couple of operations on my eyes. I had eyesight problems, and I had some problems with my height. I had a little bit of a bone joint problem, so probably mostly physical, so I couldn't be in sports. That's why I ended up being in photography. I was on the basketball team at Stoneham High, and even though I was tall, I'm actually 6'4", I was very uncoordinated. And my coach I was the type of player who'd come into the game with a minute to go if the team was ahead by 30 points. The only point I ever got was he put me in at the end of the game. It was a minute to go. I think they were up by 30 or something. And I went in, they kept passing me the ball. I'd miss. Finally, my coach said, if anybody calls a foul, just go to the foul line. He said, nobody will say anything, even if you didn't create the foul. Okay, so if somebody called a foul, I raised my hand. The guy raised his hand to do the foul, and I just went up to the foul line. And of course, the other team didn't say a word. I went up, I shot it, I missed. I shot it again, I missed. And then the referee said, shoot it underhanded like Rick Barry. So I shot it underhand, it went off the back of the backboard, I missed. But then it went in. I ended up getting my first sarcastic standing ovation. That's pretty much my ass basketball career.
Well, what a nice group, though.
Yeah, exactly. It was fun.
What kind of eye surgery did you have?
I had retina surgery. A torn retina. One day I had a paper route, and everything just looked kind of yellowish to me. I didn't know what it was. I told my mom and dad, and they took me down to the doctor, and he took a look, and he said, oh, you have a torn retina, and the retina was torn, it was like a horseshoe tear, he described it as, and he had to take me into Mass General, into Mass Eye and Air, and they put me on a table, they literally had to turn me upside down to make the retina come down, and then they just slowly repositioned it.
Hmm.
And it probably took about 6 months for it to heal.
Wow, that's scary.
Yeah, the eyesight survived. He was able to save the eye, and it worked out fine.
So, Peter, what exactly do you do?
Right now, I am a veteran at-home dad. When my son was born, my wife was a school teacher, and I would work at, after I was a photographer, I worked at Digital Equipment Corporation. I was worked as a low-level programmer there. And I had worked there for 7 years, a 9-to-5 desk job. And my first son was born in 1992. My wife had to have a son in daycare, and she didn't like it at all. After a couple of months, she'd be worried sick every day until he was picked up. And so we had a conversation about it, and daycare was expensive back then. It still is now. And we decided to have one of us stay home, and I volunteered to be the guy that stayed home. And she didn't complain. She said, sure, that'd be great. I'll just keep teaching as long as you don't mind staying home. And that was back in 93, and I've been home ever since. I had my first child in 93, and I had my second child in 95. And they're two boys. And after a little while, my first son took 2 3-hour naps every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I had quite a bit of time in the beginning to myself. And I was looking for something to do while he was sleeping. And I decided to start up a newsletter because I did have a journalism background. I could take pictures. I could write a half-decent article, not the best, but I thought maybe I could give that a try. And so the first thing I thought of was, I'll write an article about David Letterman. I'll do a newsletter about David Letterman called The Letterman Letter. But I found out eventually someone else was already doing the same thing, so I decided not to do that. Then I kept researching, and I found out that there were no resources for fathers to stay home with their kids. And I was surprised. There was a few, you know, very small newsletters out there, but there was nothing that really hit the mainstream. and I decided to start one up myself. And this was back in, quote, this was 93, 94, when the internet was pretty much just getting started, you know, before AOL. I think there was something called Prodigy back then.
Oh, yes, and CompuServe.
Yep, CompuServe. And so I had an account in there, and I started talking to at-home dads around the country. There was a message board called the Usenet, USENET, and I would talk to dads in there, and I started interviewing them. And back then, you know, nobody was really using it as a tool, you know, to do interviews, that type of thing. And so that's what I did. I started compiling interviews and talking to them more and more, and I decided to do research and find out what these guys were thinking about. And I was able to figure out that they were, their biggest problem that they had was the isolation that they felt in the home.
Mm-hmm.
They also had the stigma against them of being a Mr. Mom because of the movie Mr. Mom. And they were also looking for ways to make a little bit of money, like part-time work, that type of thing, while they're working on, like trying to figure out ways to make ends meet, either by saving money or making a little bit of money at home. So I took those three areas and I made my newsletter about those three things, each issue. I decided to do a quarterly newsletter because I didn't have time to do one every month because I had the kids. So I decided to do my first issue. I sent it out to the media in December because I needed, you know, good lead time before Father's Day. And I figured Father's Day is the time when they write about dads like us that stay home with their children. So Father's Day came around, and I just got, you know, the phone was ringing off the hook, literally. And the reporter that had gotten my press release about the newsletter, I sent out a copy of the newsletter to probably 1,200 newspapers around the country, TV stations, radio stations, newspapers. And the response was just amazing. I mean, almost half of them called me back because they'd never even heard of any newsletter that even, you know, talked about the subject, and no one had ever really researched it before. So I ended up, you know, they ended up on television, radio shows, TV articles, magazines, that type of thing. And I probably lasted about 2 years, the publicity part of it. And through that, I got a lot of people that, you know, joined. I started the At Home Dad Network, and I was able to compile a lot of names of dads who wanted to start play groups around the world, around the country and the world. And I was sent out with the newsletter a list of these fathers. And then they started starting play groups and began to make chapters of dads around the country. And it just grew from there. It just took off from there.
So are the problems or issues that face stay-at-home dads the same as stay-at-home moms?
About the same. I mean, the moms also felt isolated, but there was a lot more moms out there to keep them company. Like, if you went to the playground with your kid, then you would see, like, tons of moms everywhere, and maybe you'd be lucky if you saw one other dad standing at the other end of the playground just standing there, you know. And he wouldn't walk up to you and start talking to you. You know, I think they felt a little bit intimidated by all the other moms out there.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did, what I was able to do with the newsletter and the media publicity, was to start play groups where more dads could meet at playgrounds. And they would meet like 5 or 6 or 7 dads there. And then they could, you know, be with their kids and do activities together every week. And that's the type of thing that helped them through the loneliness and the isolation that they had, so that they could stay home with their kids. Because if they felt isolated long enough, they would just end up putting their kids back in daycare and going back to work. And that's what I was trying to prevent from happening with the newsletter.
What's the best thing about being a stay-at-home dad?
Probably the best thing is that you get to watch your kids grow up. You get to steer them toward, you know, you don't lead them toward what they want to do. You kind of steer them to what they're interested in doing. And I learned from all the interviews I had with other dads, like there was one dad who had a daycare center, and he taught me how to show my kid, if my kid was interested in anything, then I would immediately start talking about it. Like if he walked down the street and said, oh, wow, look at those ants, you know, and then he started talking about ants, and I get him an ant farm, and we'd read about ants, and you know, and he would call it a peak learning time, where they would actually, when they're interested in something, they want to learn about it, and by teaching them what they're interested in, right when they start talking about it, they learn a lot, and they learn pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate to learn that from that guy. There was a lot of at-home dads out there that I learned a little thing from each dad that helped me raise my family the way I wanted to. There was another dad who was interested in music, and his kids were very musical. And I asked him how we did that. And he told me that when kids were, even when they were born, he would have musical instruments around the house that he got from yard sales, you know, like an old piano or a guitar or whatever. And he would let them pick it up and bang on it and not worrying about what would happen to it, you know. So I thought about it, and I thought, okay, I'm going to try that. And so we had an old piano that came with our house. Probably should have been thrown away because it was out of tune. But it was an upright piano, and my son John would just bang on it, you know. And people would come over and say, why are you letting them do that? And I go, well, you know, it's an old piano, and you know, I figured he can let him do whatever he wants with it. And if he likes it, if he wants to learn how to play it, then he can. So he ended up learning how to play it. It didn't end up being his primary instrument. But over the years, he went from piano to trombone to tuba. He actually not played the tuba now. And that's his major at Boston University, where he goes to college now. And he loves it. He loves music. He likes going to seeing the bands in the city. So that's his career. My other son, David, ended up playing the trumpet. He enjoys playing jazz. He has his own band now. It's funny because my wife and I don't know how to play anything. So the musical generation totally skipped us. You know, my parents had it and they had it, but it pretty much went over us. That's kind of interesting.
What surprised you about being a stay-at-home dad?
I would say in the beginning, I could see the little bit of bias that people would have towards you. Like if you're at the supermarket, you know, they assume that you were just babysitting the kid for a day, or maybe I had a day off of work and that type of thing. And I think I was surprised that, you know, they just automatically assumed that, you know, the mom was at home. And my kids enjoyed it. They enjoyed having me home as a dad. And I guess the one thing that surprised me was that when my wife came home, they would, you know, they would go right to her, you know. Funny, because they still have that maternal instinct, you know. They go to mom. And it's a good way of raising children, because they're being raised without any bias or any stereotypical ideas about, you know, parenting or who stays at home. And one of those things where, you know, when the dad stays at home, it really lowers the stress in the family, because you have both parents involved instead of just one parent. And I think that the dad, you know, if he's working, he may not be as involved with his kid as when he comes home from work. But mom comes home and she's very involved with the kid. So I think you end up in an at-home dad family, and both parents being involved rather than just one.
Is there a particular type of person who's good at being a stay-at-home dad?
Yeah, you have to be very patient. You have to be very, you know, if you have attention and deficit disorder, then you're in trouble. You have to learn how to sit down with them and just sit on the floor and play with them. That's all they want to do. Not, you know, no magic formula. And listen to them. Listen to what they say and do what they want, basically, you know, whatever they're interested in. Kind of guide them toward what their interest is. And always be honest with them. And they will respect you back. And as they get older, as teenagers, they, you know, they'll keep talking to you. And most teenagers just clam up, you know, when they get that old. And they kind of keep the personal life. You know, they don't talk to you about it. But
as a stay-at-home dad who is also working on your newsletter, is there a typical day that would fit that category?
When I was working, when I was doing the newsletter, the typical day was that I'd make breakfast, and my wife would go to work, and I'd wake my son up, give him a bath, take him downstairs, and then I'd do the whole breakfast routine. Then I would take him down to the park, or maybe down to the fire station, which is a great place. They love going there, and they love it when you go there. and we go to the pet store. You know, I take them to places that were free, basically. You know, and they could just play with whatever was there. You know, look at the animals, to the zoo, or, you know, or at the local park, you know, with the other dads. And of course, I had a play group. And actually, I went to another play group that was created through the newsletter. So every day, that would pretty much be it. And then my wife would come home, and she'd be exhausted, and I'd give her about a half an hour to, you know, wind down. I would make supper for her. In the beginning, though, it was difficult because I didn't clean the house as much as I should have. I didn't make as many meals as much as I should have. And she would kind of automatically take over. And it took a while for us to really make the switch. Cause, you know, it was almost like I was on her turf in the kitchen. And, you know, she wanted to cook a little bit. And she even did the laundry more. And, you know, after a while, it took a while before, you know, I would do the laundry a little bit more than she did. But it, even now, it's still 50-50, you know.
Now that your kids are older, how has your life changed?
As they got older, of course, you know, they went to elementary school and high school, that sort of thing. I had more time on my hands. And in 2004, about 7-8 years ago, I decided that I was writing the same material over and over in the newsletter, talking about the same issues over and over. So I've had a couple of publishers contact me, and I settled on one to put a book together based on the newsletter. So that took about two years. It was called the Stay-at-Home Dad Handbook. And it basically covered all the same issues I had in the newsletter, except it was in chapter form. And the book did pretty well. It was a small printing. I had about 5,000 copies, and they did sell out. But it's the type of thing that the dad don't go out and run out and buy. You know, it was the type of thing that moms would get for the dad, or mother-in-law would get for the dad, you know. It's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun doing that. I also did a little bit of consulting work for some of the TV shows. I worked with a producer, the Dateline, or 2020, every time they did a story about at-home dads. There was a show called Wife Swap, and I talked with them, and I gave them the idea to try to do one with a dad swap, two at-home dads, which they did do. That was fun. I enjoyed doing that.
And what is your major project now?
Right now, actually, slowly, I started out as a photographer when I was a kid, and when I became an at-home dad, I literally stopped using the camera for 15 years. And now I just started picking it up again with the digital photography. So I'm learning digital, you know, photography. I'm starting to create websites. I'm doing a couple of jobs right now. I'm very slowly getting hired to do small websites in town. And probably I'll build upon that, where I do the photography and the video and the layout design. So that might turn into a small business as my second son goes into high school and college.
So, Peter, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
Mostly, like for the newsletter, I was motivated because basically I had nothing to do. And I wanted to, you know, build my time. And I wanted to make a little bit of money, part-time money. And with the newsletter, although I didn't make that much, it was enough, you know, to save a little bit of extra money. And I really enjoyed doing it. I enjoyed writing articles. I enjoyed interviewing dads. We actually got to meet. There was one dad that found out about the newsletter, and he called me one day and wanted to start a at-home dad convention. And so every year in Chicago, he would set it up, and I would go over there. We'd get about over 100 guys every year to meet. And I enjoyed doing that, and it was just more of a camaraderie thing where I didn't really have to get motivated. It was just something that was fun to do. I looked forward to being with the guys. I looked forward to interviewing them. So it was really something that I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
You know how it is when you have a job that you enjoy. It's a lot easier to do it.
Let me turn the question around. When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
I'm fairly laid back. I never really had a problem with that, actually. I never really got stressed out or, you know, had problems in that area. I was very lucky. I had kids that were very well behaved. You know, they didn't. You know, my first son had temper tantrums now and then, And I would just kind of wait them out, you know. I just, like, let them have a screaming and yelling fit. And when it was over, he just like, oh, I guess, I, you know, he'd be like, you're not giving me any response from that, so the next time a temper tantrum wasn't as bad, you know. Slowly he just stopped doing it. And the second kid, you know, noticed that the first one was a pretty calm guy, and, you know, he ended up being almost, I used to call him the self-maintaining baby, because he was so easy to take care of. You know, it wasn't too stressful for me, so it worked out.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
I would say, actually, later on in life, probably about 10 years ago, I had trouble with my eye again, my right eye, and I ended up with a detached retina, and I lost quite a bit of sight in that eye, and that took a long time to get used to. And it happened while I was still, and the kid was still growing up, getting older. And luckily I had them because it kept me from getting depressed about it. I was really depressed about it probably for a good year.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was something that I had to get used to. And as I got used to it, every day I would, you know, when it first started, I would think about it all day long, 100% a day. Yeah, I mean, in the beginning, I barely even wanted to get out of bed, you know. And then slowly over time, I was able to motivate myself to, you know, get out of bed, go down and take care of the kids. And then as time went by and I got used to my new eyesight, then it was, everything was pretty, you know, worked out the way it was before. Realized I could still see, I could still drive, you know, it really didn't change anything, but it was just something that I had to adjust to.
I've had bad eyesight all my life. Was it harder having eyesight and then having some problem with it?
It was harder just the problem. It was harder getting used to it. The eyesight itself isn't that bad. It's just that I had to get used to the new eyesight. And what happened with my right eye, I lost probably like half the vision in it. And it, you know, I could still see just as well as I could before, but it was in my left eye when I opened it would kind of make up for it. But it just took a long time for my brain to adjust to it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It just took a while to get used to it.
If you're giving a commencement address to high school or college, what would you say?
I would say that every dad should at least give it a try for a year, that they should, you know, volunteer to you know, stay home for 1 year, see what it's like, and see if they like it. And I would say, you know, sit down with your kids, enjoy your kids while you have them, because the years go by fast. And life is short, and it is amazing when, you know, you're going through the grocery store and you have a kid who's having a temper tantrum in your cot, you know, and you're like, ah, and you're freaking out over it. And, you know, those are actually the best times of your life. You look back at those and you want them back again. And if these kids that they're fun with, they're mm-hmm. kids that you should lead. You shouldn't lead them, you should guide them. So listen to what they say and read them a book every day.
I want to thank Peter Bayless for joining me today. Thanks, Peter. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be on your show, and I appreciate you doing all this work for the other dads out there.